Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and today we're talking with Rick Dacry, president of Dacry Associates. He's a recognized workforce expert, management consultant, and national speaker on employee employment law and organizational issues. He also is the author of a book, Uncomplicating Management, Focus on Your Stars and Your Company Will Soar, and over 300 articles for publications. He's been doing a lot of media events having to do with MSNBC, Fox Business, ESPN, CBS, NPR, the coveted and most amazing Rick Dacry. Good morning.
Good morning, David. Thank you.
How are
Thank
you,
you for
morning?
That kind introduction. Well, I'm well.
You know, it's good to know that there's superstars amongst us here in Maine.
Well, I'm fortunate to be with you.
No, it's good. It's all good. And for those of you who are out there, Rick and I have known each other for quite a long time and truly enjoy a great partnership there, which we are going to be actually up at the HR convention here. And we're going to be talking about some wonderful recruiting there,
recruitment.
Aren't we?
I think we're on May 6th,
yeah.
Under the tent.
Yeah.
By the ocean.
Think about that.
It's going to be terrific.
It's going to be awesome. Outside.
Outside.
Outside. It's going to be a wonderful event.
From
we're really excited. HR professionals.
That those people who attend the session will be getting lobsters and steamers and corn on the cob and corn chowder free. So actually clam chowder, but I'm excited about it.
Well, I'm not sure about that because I don't know what the menu's going to be. But if you do get that, Bill Rick, he'll be happy to pay for it. Anyways, we're going to move on, Rick. How are we doing this morning?
We're doing well. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. This is great.
Well, you know,
we're
going to be talking about recruiting today because I think this is a topic that I know you and I have done some TV work that's going to be coming up on Mind Your Own Business Television in the Biddeford area. And we're also going to be talking about recruiting today at this convention. Tell me some of the things you're seeing out there today in terms of trends.
Well, it's interesting to note that because we've been in such a hunker down phase for the last several years, and recruitment is taking off. And employers who are ready will benefit. Those who have been hanging back are going to have some trouble. First trend that I see is happening. There is an increase in turnover among existing employees and employers, and I think the reason for that is employees are feeling comfortable about moving around. That's a sure sign that the economy is improving. Existing employees always hunker down during recessions to stay safe, but now they're venturing out. So there's a real opportunity for employers to get good employees, but on the downside, employees are feeling free to go, so that employers need to make sure their house is in order or they're going to lose them. The best form of recruitment is good retention program. But let me talk about some other trends that I'm seeing out there. The competition is getting stiff for quality talent. And part of the reason it is getting so difficult is because there is a shortage of talent out there. We know that here in Maine, where we suffer from having an older workforce, so less workers, more of our young people are leaving the state. There are not as many opportunities, and we've been hearing an awful lot about the whole STEM issue. Where there's a lack of good quality technical employees and a real need for it. For our economy in Maine to grow, we need to have good, solid people. And so there is a shortage for that. What that's going to do from the employee's perspective is that's going to raise wages. So expect to see that employers are scurrying around, looking at their compensation, making sure they are being paid fairly. I see that within my business. Because not only am I helping employers recruit, they're coming to me saying, look, we got to make sure our wages are competitive so that, one, we can retain our employees, and, two, that we can attract good people into our house. So first thing that I think employers need to be doing is understanding about the competition out there and making sure their house is in order and paying their people well.
We talked a little bit about Maine. Are you also seeing this trend in the whole Northeast? Are you seeing this as a national trend? I mean, certainly we are, but I'm just curious if you're seeing this on a
on a higher level in terms of on a national scope? And then the other part of the question would be, is it not only in the private sector, but are you also seeing it in the public sector and in municipalities, an area that I know you focus a lot on?
Yes, I am. I think, first of all, my client base is throughout New England, the Northeast really primarily. But I'm in touch with other individuals, employers outside of New England. So this is a national trend. But within my client base within New England, it clearly is. It's across industry segments. So it isn't just a single segment that's seeing that increase, but is going across trends. You're right. I do an awful lot of work with municipalities and public utilities. And there is a shortage of key people moving into those particular industry segments. And they are, in turn, looking at their wages. Now, we know that municipalities, particularly here in Maine, are forced to hunker down because of budget cuts that we're seeing, particularly on the state level. At the same time, they need people. Municipalities are big businesses. And we seem to forget that sometimes. But they are a significant business, and they need to be competitive. They need to have quality people. And so recruiting, whether it is a city manager or whether it is a police chief, and I just did searches with both of those, it is critically important that they compensate their people fairly, and there is a significant shortage of those folks available, not only just here in Maine, but throughout New England, throughout the nation. So, yeah, it is happening all over.
No, and I'm sure it is. You know, with the budget cuts and with all the constraints put on cities and towns today in terms of tax revenue and people being concerned, are you seeing there being a real clash between the amount they have to pay and the amount they're willing to pay in terms of, you know, getting quality talent?
Yeah, I mean, I think wages limit the ability to attract. The number one thing that a candidate looks for, first thing, is wages. Is the wages going to be there? There are a few candidates that are going to leave one employer to go to another employer for less money. Or, for that matter, for same money. So there is pressure on the part of the candidates for an increased wages. At the same time, with budgets, it is difficult to be able to adjust wages accordingly for candidates. And in what I am seeing within my clients, within the municipal, is that boards of selectmen and councils are saying, really, do I really have to pay those kind of wages in order to attract people? As a result of that, they are looking at compensation studies. I'm doing one right now for a local municipality, where we are looking not only at municipal wages, but we're looking at private sector wages so that they're comparable people. A finance person, an information technology person, an administrative assistant, a human resource person in a private sector can also work in the public sector. So there's movement amongst the various segments of the industry, and so they have to be competitive there. So it is not uncommon for a municipal employer to have to look at what their neighboring bank, as an example, is paying their finance person so that they can remain competitive.
We're talking with Rick Dacry, president of Dacry & Associates. You know, one of the things that I've seen in terms of that same trend is that they're also looking at the benefit costs that are happening, especially with healthcare increases having to be across the board. And there's no question that healthcare has gone up in price. That is putting a interesting pressure on the wage, is putting an increasing pressure on the benefit package. What are you seeing currently in those trends?
Well, that's another interesting aspect of it, because people are paying attention to benefits, as they should. When I talk to my clients about wages, I remind them that there's only so much in the pie and that you've got to look at total compensation, wages, and benefits. And benefits are a big piece of the equation. Employees look primarily at wages, and you have to remind them about the cost of the benefits they have. They're becoming much more sensitive now to the cost of health insurance because it has been rising. So what I'm seeing from a benefit standpoint is a lot of pressure on this issue of cost of health insurance. And how do I, as an employer, maintain my costs yet remain competitive? And so they're getting very creative around deductibles and copays and around services provided. Now, the Affordable Care Act mandates an awful lot of service that has to be within the health insurance plan. And now with the rule changes on that, on who's eligible and who isn't eligible, it creates a little bit of confusion, but employers are pretty much figuring out. Employees, on the other hand, want to make sure that their cost of benefits are affordable to them. So when I talk to employees or when I talk to candidates who are looking to make a move, and I do a lot of coaching around job search, when they're talking about wages, I stress to them, make sure you understand the cost of your benefits to ensure that you're getting a fair wage to make a move for the next employer. But let me get to your question. What am I seeing in terms of the benefits? The whole health insurance is a primary concern. Secondly is retirement and various versions of retirement. 401k, what kind of match? On an executive level, is there a 457 in there so that I can get additional benefits? Those are the kinds of things that candidates are looking for. They're becoming much more sophisticated in terms of what they're looking for in terms of that. On a municipal side, which has always been, well, we'll pay 100% of their wages, of their health insurance. They've got a terrific retirement plan, particularly in Maine on the Maine State Retirement. I do a lot of work in Massachusetts. Massachusetts has a great retirement. Organizations are having councils and administration are looking at those benefits because they are so expensive. And so I can see the change of those coming about in there. Time off is another key benefit there. It used to be you'd have your vacation, you'd have your holidays, and you'd have sick days and personal days. Well, there's more of an emphasis on paid time off, that whole package, allowing employees to be able to use it as they want. So flexibility that employees are looking for is putting pressure on employers to make sure that they have good quality time off benefits. Now, on the legislative level, we're seeing more and more states, it's happened in Massachusetts, it's probably going to happen eventually in Maine, where paid time off becomes a mandated benefit. And so watch the trends of benefit changes coming about. It started on the West Coast, it's moving across, it's here in New England, it's happened in Massachusetts, watch it happen in Maine, there'll be pressure for paid time off coming up.
Yeah, no, I think that is one of the trends we're seeing. It's certainly come across the country. One of the other things that also may affect municipalities and utilities, and I thought I'd bring it up because we're talking about healthcare, is the Cadillac tax, which is now moving forward. And there has been, at this point, no, even though, of course, there's a lot of talk about trying to change it or do things, the reality is it doesn't appear that there's any will to make that change. That is going to affect some of the utilities and municipalities who really do have incredibly generous healthcare programs. And it's going to even make it extremely expensive or extremely, they're going to have to make some changes and cuts. What do you see in terms of that change, or if any, at this point?
I haven't seen any change at all. Again, the utilities that I work with are the public utilities. So they're the smaller ones. They're not the privates that you see, the Central Maine Power, the Bangor Hydro, those kinds of large utilities. The smaller ones have not been concerned too much about that. Their wages are not so high. Their benefits costs are not so high. I am seeing a change in their benefits, so that there is more cost sharing in benefits, which has been a change. This predates the Affordable Care Act and the things of that, because it became a fact: can I afford it? There is a tremendous pressure in terms of that with union negotiations around the issue of health care. It's on the table. It has never been on the table before. It's creating a lot of problems in the negotiation process. But we're seeing, I'm seeing some incremental changes where employers, the municipalities or the public utilities are saying to the bargaining units, you're going to have to share some of the costs. And they're opening their books, they're showing where the costs are in order to be able to enjoy some cost sharing. And then obviously, it's because it's a negotiation, they're giving in other areas.
We're seeing in the private sector some talk, because the health care costs are going up, that some employers are starting to look at other benefits that they're starting to either take away or they're lessening. And in some cases, it's the match on the 401k. They're starting to bring it down a little bit in terms of what they're matching. They're taking away some of the perks, if you want to say, paying for education, paying for different things that are out there. Again, it depends on the employer, but we're seeing it because the money has to come from somewhere. As you said, there's only so much money in the pot to pay for all this, and you can only pay an X amount of whatever percentage of your actual profit is to that. Where are you seeing in terms of those trends as well?
Well, I think we're seeing it, and you're right, it's happening all around. The biggest area, because the biggest dollar amount that you can attack is in the healthcare. And so in that sense, what I'm seeing is creating plans that have higher deductibles, higher copays, higher cost amounts for spouses and family. So that's where the pressure is coming on board to be able to do that. I have seen some takeaway in the area of 401k match. I haven't seen too much change elsewhere other than within the large amount of weeks off in vacation, some caps on that, some caps on carryover of time off are the areas that I'm seeing it. At the same time, as employers are doing this pushback, and they've been able to do that because of the nature of the economy, I think you're going to see a switchback where the pendulum is coming the other way because employees are now are going to be taking a command position with this shortage of labor. So as the market opens up, as more employers are hiring or needing to hire, then skilled labor is going to be able to make demands that they weren't able to make in the past. And so I think that's going to be an interesting trend where we are.
We're talking with Rick Dacry, president of Dacry Associates. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking to Rick Dacry, president of Dacry Associates, and we're talking about recruiting today and some of the trends that are happening out there. You know, Rick, we've talked about during the first segment some of the trends having to do with salary, having to do with the switch from an employer-focused employment times to now employee-focused times. We talked a little about some of the benefit changes we're seeing out there in the workplace today. From an employer standpoint now, we have said that employers are going to have a harder time hiring great, solid candidates. Though I will always say, no matter what time of year it is, no matter what type of economy, great talent is always being sought out. We'll say that that's always true. How can an employer today think about how they can change their brand, change the hiring concept, and really make sure that they're focusing on ways to really attract talent to them?
Well, first of all, you said the right word when you talk about recruitment brand. And that's an important piece that employers often don't think about. What is their brand? And it's a nice little term. We hear it bantered around a lot, but it's really true. If you are an employer that is attractive to prospective employees, if you're known as a great place to work, people are going to be attracted to come to work for you. And so it's important for you to keep your house in order, that you treat your employees well, you take care of them, you compensate them fairly, you don't have to compensate them great, but you have to compensate them fairly, and you have to provide a good place to work. If you do that, then employees, prospective employees, will be attracted to you. If you don't take care of your employees, if you treat them poorly, if there's a lot of turnover and chaos in your organization, people will run away from you so fast. You'll turn over your existing workforce, and the word gets out on the street. So it's very important to create a positive recruitment brand in the organization. Now, you have to go out and tell your story. And so that's an important piece that we see within organizations who are creating a brand. They are differentiating themselves from others. They are attracting a certain kind of candidate that's like them. The L.L. Bean model, as an example, of attracting individuals that are want that outdoor lifestyle. That's an important piece. The Johnson & Johnson that attracts that individual that is attracted to a family-friendly kind of organization. The Toms of Maine that has an environmentally conscious workforce. Those people are naturally attracted to those organizations. They promote themselves very well on social media. They promote themselves very well on their website. And those are incredible, important pieces to attract candidates. Now, how do I go out and find candidates? And there are various ways that we're seeing in there. One is that whole social network process. But the other one is employee referrals. And employee referrals, I talk to my clients about on a regular basis. That's one of the first things that we kind of focus on, is get your employees to go out there and be ambassadors of your organization to attract them.
That's critical.
It is absolutely critical. Your employees, not your HR department, and I'm not knocking the HR department, I'm just saying your regular employees, can go out there and attract candidates, quality candidates in. They know where they are. They know where the like kind of employees are hanging out, and they bring them in there. And if they're telling the story about their company, then they can bring them in. And an effective referral program will compensate employees well for making that referral. Not this small stuff where they have to wait a lifetime to be able to get paid out, but something where it pays them well. Let me tell you a story. I had a client that was having tremendous trouble recruiting quality candidates. In fact, they were a nursing home, they could not get nurses. And we decided that we wanted to use an employee referral program with them. So we created one, and we paid $1,000 for every nurse that was hired day one. And now the concern was, well, what happens if the person quits on day two? Why should we pay that out to the employee? And my response to that is, the employee did their job. They found the candidate. You, as the manager, made the decision to hire. If you put an ad in the newspaper and you hire somebody and they leave the next day, you can't call the newspaper up and say, give me my money back. You can't call Facebook up and say, I'm sorry for the ad I placed on Facebook. Give me my money back. So why are you penalizing employees? Well, what happened with this situation? We had a flood of candidates. We had good quality nurses come through the door. And so it was an investment well made to be able to attract and then retain those nurses. Employee referral programs are the best, let me repeat that, are the best form of recruitment short of just retaining your existing employees. So put them in place.
So let's talk about that for just a little bit, because I think one of the things that one employers might think is, should this be for everyone? And the reason I say that is, if you currently have a problem brand where you might have not the right people in place, and you're trying to change the culture or change the organizational structure because you're not the brand of choice, you haven't right now got the people in place to make that happen, and you might have some questionable employees there. Mm-hmm. Is there a first step to then saying, okay, let's get our house a little bit in order here, or let's talk about how we want to make that happen before we go to that program? Or how would you put that together?
Well, I think if employees don't like working there, they're not going to attract or get people to come work there. I mean, you don't want to bring in your friend into a place that's a problem. So it's important that employers, as a first step to get their house in order, understand what what is happening. I worked on an organization where they had brought me in to develop a recruitment program, and I realized when, as soon as I got there, that there was some significant problems, that they were bleeding them out the back door. So as many people as we brought in, they just keep going through. We turned around and we focused on retention. And the way to focus on retention is to take a look at their existing organization. We conducted some employee engagement, employee satisfaction surveys to understand what the issues were. We put together an action plan to address those problems. We began training their managers and supervisors in effective management techniques. And what we did is we put together a number of things which basically turned the situation around in there, so retention increased. By doing that, we were able to then focus on hiring and bringing people in. So the first thing you have to do is really make sure that you're an employer of choice, that you run a well-run organization, and then focus on the recruitment.
We're talking with Rick Dacre, president of Dacre & Associates, and we're talking about recruiting today. You know, one of the things you talked about in terms of this, making sure that the employer has the right culture, the right environment, and starts off with that area, we're talking about employee engagement. And employee engagement has been a topic we've talked a lot about on the show. Many different aspects. You can imagine there's 1,000 different ways that you look at engagement. How do you measure engagement in an organization?
Well, you know, it's an interesting process to find out how well a run an organization runs. Many years ago, one of my consulting, I did workers' compensation cost containment. So people get injured at work, and they go out, and we measure that. I could tell how well-run an organization was by walking into the organization, asking them to show me their loss run. A loss run is a computer printout, very simply, of how many injuries they are and whether people are returning and what the costs are. If the costs were high, which meant people were staying out, they had a problem there. If costs were low, they didn't. And the reason is, under workers' compensation rules, and this is a little anecdote, under workers' compensation rules, people are paid to stay home. Good people come back to work. Engaged people want to come back to work. You take care of your people, your workers' compensation costs go down. So how do I measure engagement? Well, first of all, I like to talk to the employees. I like to survey the employees to find out. I look at their turnover rate. I look at their attendance rate. I look at their quality rate. I look at their productivity rate. If you look at those barometers, then you'll understand whether you have an engaged workforce. And those are important. Talk to the customers. What's the customer's reaction to the employees they talk to? Those are the kinds of things that'll let you know whether your workforce is engaged or not. It's not important to have a workforce that holds hands and sings Kumbaya. It's important to have a workforce that's engaged and productive. They'll do what they need to do to ensure the success of their organization because they're taken care of in the organization. You want productive employees, quality-conscious employees, customer-oriented employees. Those are the kind of employees you have who are also happy. Not, you know, this isn't, you know, fun times. You want them productive.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We're talking about different ways in terms of making them productive and fun and making the environment productive and fun, I should say. One of the things that I would say that is a trend that I'm certainly seeing, and I know you have as well, is employees that are working from home, mm-hmm. employees that are working remotely. Tell me a little about what you're seeing in terms of trends in that area from a long-term standpoint.
Well, clearly it's happening. There are certain jobs that lend themselves to allowing people to work from home. There are other jobs that aren't. You can't obviously work an assembly line from home. A manufacturing position can't be worked from home. But administrative positions can be done from home. Even financial positions. A lot of other positions, if you have a laptop and a telephone, even you don't even need a telephone anymore. But if you have a laptop, you can pretty much do a lot of it. And so I'm seeing more and more of that. I'm seeing employers who are working in different parts of the country where employees in different parts of the country, where employees basically need somebody who has a particular skill set, whether it's advertising, whether it's marketing, or whether it's creating a website. You can do these things remotely. So I'm seeing a trend to more and more of that. That said, there are issues that are created with them. How do I motivate those people? How do I ensure that they are performing their jobs? So we have to be able to measure the productivity and performance levels there. We also have to make sure that we're fairly compensating them for the time they work, particularly if they're a non-exempt worker. The Department of Labor is scrutinizing that very carefully. So monitoring those hours worked is important. The other thing we're seeing is a trend in independent contractors. And so there are more and more independent contractors who you may never see or rarely see, but they're producing a product, whatever that product is, and they're delivering that product to you, and they're doing it from some remote location. It could be another company, or it could be within their home. It doesn't matter. And so there is that big trend to that. We're talking about the gig worker. That individual who goes from company to company, project to project, has a particular skill set, they do their job, and they leave. And so we're seeing a tremendous increase in that. I wrote in my book on complicating management back in 2009, I said that was the trend that was going to happen as we move forward. My HR colleagues snickered and said, no way is it going to happen, and now we're seeing it is cruelly there. More independent contractors, more part-time workers, more gig workers, more project-orientated, more flex time is happening in the workplace. It is a different workplace from our parents' workplace, and it's continuing to evolve. So watch it. In 5 years from now, we'll be talking about this again, talking about something totally different that we haven't figured out yet.
No, it's really true. And this is a generational factor as well. I mean, Gen Y, Gen Z, which is now starting to come in the workforce, they're all expecting these abilities to be flexible. They're expecting you to have modern technology that they can use with social media and on their smartphones and on their iPads and on their, you know, iWatch now that has come out. I mean, this is all where it's going. And it is a shift in mentality for some of the senior leadership who you know, understand it but kind of don't understand it or don't know exactly how to measure it and monitor it, and they're going, how do we make that happen? And so are you seeing conversations happening at the C-suite level?
Yes.
In terms of that?
Yeah, I am seeing that. I mean, I've seen a change also in the last couple of years where the C-suite was trying to control it. Now they're beginning to say, I think we need to embrace it. I don't understand it, but we need to embrace it. To more of, we got to take advantage of this whole thing. So I think what I'm talking, when I talk to my clients about it, there is more of an emphasis to figure out how do we leverage it? How do we maximize the talent of those individuals who have it to our advantage?
Right, to empower them, make this even more bigger than it could be.
Exactly, exactly. Let me tell you an interesting thing. As you know, I do an awful lot of work in municipalities and public utilities. Well, a couple of years ago, there was huge ice storm, and it wiped out in huge sections of Massachusetts, primarily, where there was no power. And yet, there was inability to communicate. Phone lines were down. There was no electricity, and yet a number of my clients embraced the concept of social media and were informing their residents via Twitter and Facebook how things are happening. I work with some fire departments here in Maine who communicate regularly to their residents about what's happening, safety tips, etc., through Twitter and Facebook. There's more communication now to employees via Twitter and texting than email. So there is a change. I'm seeing that with my clients who will text me now rather than pick up the phone or send me an email because they want instant response on a situation. Frankly, I like it because I always have it with me. As long as I have my phone with me, my iPhone, I'm in communication with them. So that's the trend.
There's no question. I mean, I'm seeing it too from a standpoint of Facebook. I receive messages, instant messages on Facebook from CEOs now. That would have been unheard of
sure.
absolutely unheard of 3 or 4 years ago. We're talking with Rick Dacherty. We're talking about trends today in terms of recruiting. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
If you'd like to be a guest on the HR Power Hour or be a show sponsor, send David an email today at info@hrpowerhour.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Check out CMA's new career website at CMAcareer.com. Today we're talking with Rick Dacherty. He is the president of Dacherty & Associates. And just an all-around nice guy. Rick, thanks for being and doing the show today.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, we've been talking about recruiting trends that's going on out there in the workplace, and we've talked a little bit about a number of different topics. But one of the things I'd like to look at is how it's trending differently for the different generations and how employees and employers can be matched better. And different ways of making that happen. What are you seeing in some of those new trends?
Well, I think it's interesting in terms of how you can attract candidates now. The older worker, and I guess the boomers, you know, used to look in the ad in the paper, and then they started looking on Monster. But what I'm finding from a recruitment standpoint, employers are able to get all employees or more employees now through the use of social media. And so that becomes the trend process of how do I attract candidates. Now, it's changing. And it's important that individuals have a LinkedIn page, but the much younger worker, the new workers, aren't really moving into that way. What I'm also seeing is video-based resumes. Candidates creating their own websites to be found. And so it's kind of an exciting trend that I'm watching happen. And I think it's a much more effective way to do that. It is critical when we talk about this whole social media piece is that individuals who are looking for a job, to Google themselves. You got to make sure what's out there about you looks good. And if you got some problems, clean it up. So take the bongs off your Facebook page and be careful what you say on Facebook because let's face the reality there, it's going to hurt you and employers are checking you out. Now, there is an awful lot of legislation around the issue of what employers can do in terms of being able to access social media, but it's there. And that's the direction that I see younger employers looking at. And in terms of employers going out there and finding candidates through the use of social media.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say about employers going out and looking at social media or different areas. There's a lot of legislation on that, but that's typically about, you know, passwords and using different things that they really shouldn't or couldn't have access to unless they specifically got it, some backdoor way to get in there. But the fact is so much is public today. You mm-hmm. know, I obviously tell candidates all the time. When they tell me, but my account is private. I go, there is nothing private on the internet. There's nothing private in Facebook. There's nothing private on Twitter. There's nothing private on LinkedIn. There's nothing private. I don't care what you have for a privacy setting. There is a way to find it. And so I think it's a matter of employers know that too. And so they'll do that Google search. They'll actually do a Bing search or do other search engines. And I think one of the misconceptions is it's all about Google. There are so many new search engines out mm-hmm. there that we have to watch that too. And they're bringing up new content or different content and making that happen. So do you see employers really embracing this search method as a substitute for background, since there's such a, you know, a discussion about that today?
I don't think it's a substitute, but it is a big part of it. I most recently did a search for a city manager. It was interesting because I Googled all of the candidates. One of the candidates that I found, who on paper looked terrific, was fired from their last four jobs for getting into fights with their council. Obviously, that was an issue. The candidate we ultimately hired was someone who had a number of articles written about him for things that he accomplished in his community. And that was a very important piece as part of the decision-making process. You see, as I tell candidates, employers don't hire you for tasks performed. Employers hire you and pay you for accomplishments. Here we had independent corroboration of things that he had done. Now, we were able to then pick up the phone and talk to the respective individuals about the things he did. So social media, Google, Bing helped us in that search process of doing a background check, but it wasn't a substitute for a regular background
check. Well, you talk about the video and the website-based resumes we're seeing. It's a new trend. Mm-hmm. It's an emerging trend. I mean, it's not mainstream yet, but it's coming. I would say that it has a risk, does it not? Because if it's not done well, your presentation is just like a resume. It has to be almost perfect. It has to be spot on. It's about taking the extra time to make it good quality, you know, making the video really entertaining to look at and really presentable. And I'm not sure yet that that's fully in effect by everyone.
Well, I agree with that. But I'm going to tell you, if I'm hiring a marketing person who's talking about the importance of social media and what they can do, and they don't have a social media presence, then
absolutely,
they got a problem. If they're talking about the importance of video and they don't have a video resume, then I'm a little concerned about that. You see, candidates have to look at themselves as a product that they are marketing, whether they are going for a marketing position or whether they're going for the CFO position. And so they have to present themselves well. In this new work world, it isn't just when you walk in the door, or it isn't just your resume. It's everything about you. And
it's your full presentation.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
So digital.
They need to do
social.
That.
Everything.
Everything is there. So that's an important piece in the process for recruiting. So I think that is important, yes.
You know, it's interesting. We're seeing a lot of companies tweet out for jobs today, and in terms of the trend of going on Facebook, posting positions. Heck, there are even companies talking about putting applications on Facebook in different ways so that you can link into it and you can make that all a seamless entry and they can download your information automatically from LinkedIn. And there are companies that do that already. Mm-hmm. Is there a risk to making sure that that information is 100% clean to make sure that it's right? If it isn't, is there a way to make sure that you go back and make that happen?
When you say right, do you mean from the candidate standpoint?
Yes, from the candidate standpoint.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's like anything. If I came into your place and filled out a paper application, I still have to verify that data on there. If I get a resume, I have to verify that data. So yes, you always have to verify data, and that's why background checks are so important. When you hire on an executive level, as an example, you've got to do more than those written phone call background checks. You should be doing criminal background checks. You should be doing credit checks on these. There are legislation and there are processes to do that, but it is important to get a good quality background. If you're not vetting your candidates, then you're at risk. And those employers who say, I can't get good information and therefore are not doing it at all, are negligent. And they're putting their organization at risk for hiring an individual who, in turn, could be a problem for them.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I have heard employers say, well, you know, you can't get any information from a reference check because nobody gives any information anymore. That's not necessarily true. And if you open up that dialogue with that former employer, you end up finding more than you know, even if in the tone and inflection of the answers. So it is negligent not to be able to get that information and provide it for the company, the organization.
I agree. I tell my clients to use reference authorization forms, send them over to the prospective employee. I will often tell them, depending on the level of the position, to not call the human resource department because they've been trained to not give information, call supervisors directly, call supervisors at home, put the burden on the candidate to get phone numbers, and you as an employer identify who you want to speak to, not necessarily the three people that they gave you, to get a good background check. But there's nothing worse than hiring an individual who may have been violent, may have sexually harassed, may have stolen, whatever, because you didn't do a reference check and you found out and didn't find out until after they were hired. And once you hire them, it's not easy to fire them.
No, look, it's the old hire slow, fire fast, right? The old
Absolutely
routine
right.
that's out there. We're talking with Rick Dacry, president of Dacry & Associates. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB and presented by cmacareer.com. Today we're talking with Rick Dacry, president of Dacry Associates, and we've been talking about trends that are happening in recruitment today. You know, Rick, we've had a great discussion today about a lot of different trends. I'd like to kind of wrap it up here in the last segment and kind of talk about a success story from an employer standpoint. Someone who has put these practices that we've talked about, these trends, and have really embraced them and have really put it into practice and made it work. What do you have for that example?
Well, I worked with an organization a number of years ago that was really bleeding because they could not attract nor retain quality candidates. We put together a recruitment campaign for them to be able to attract candidates. They were looking primarily for nurses. It was in the healthcare industry. But I've also done this in municipalities. But let's talk about this healthcare industry. First of all, we worked very hard on creating a positive recruitment brand. The administrator of this facility was a strong proponent of education. We made that their brand. We promoted employee education, employee assistance. She provided scholarships for people to be able to get their nursing degrees. And so that became the thrust of their recruitment brand. We then took a look at what constituted an ideal candidate for them. We spent a lot of time profiling the best candidates that would fit in their organization, who would be successful, and we also wanted to know who wouldn't be successful in there. Once we were able to do that, we identified where those candidates were, and we went out to the marketplace to find them. And we utilized a lot of employee referrals to do that, some target advertising, some involvement with professional associations, and even got the community involved. We had an open house on Halloween and brought in a number of individuals made some great hires that way. We had a good flood of candidates, primarily through the employee referral program. We trained their managers to interview correctly. We weren't looking for warm bodies. These managers were not trained in interviewing. They didn't know what to look for. They didn't know how to identify the right candidate. And so a lot of time was put into how do I interview correctly? How do I evaluate candidate? I had to slow them down. to avoid the temptation of making hires too quickly. They wanted to be able to fill positions. They were short, but we had to slow it down so that we didn't make mistakes. We always checked references in multiple references to make sure that we had the right candidates in place. We did a critical evaluation of every candidate that went in there, and then those individuals that were ultimately hired were put through an extensive orientation, onboarding process with, and were matched up with a buddy to make sure. One of the problems this client had is they had a tendency to eat their young. And what that meant was new people were just chewed up, spit out, and they'd say next. Well, there weren't any next, and we had to change that kind of mentality. So the mentoring program, the onboarding process in getting those managers who chewed up candidates as part of the interviewers, you don't chew up the people you make the decision to hire, in place, resulted in a significant change in their ability to recruit and retain workers. It was a real success story. It's a success story that a number of years later, I can look back and see they're still doing those things. So the process works. I've used that same model with other organizations. I did it in a correctional institution. I've done it in municipalities. I've done it in human services. I've done it in education. It's a process that works and works well.
Rick, I want to thank you for being on the show today. You know, certainly your book, Uncomplicating Management, Focus on Your Stars and Your Company Will Soar, has been out for a while. Certainly they can go to your website. What is your website?
Dacri.com. That's Dacri.com.
And they can certainly go after this show to the HRPowerHour.com website where they'll see your bio, be able to listen to the show later. Be able to obviously click on and buy your book. We'll make sure all that's up there. I think it's an important aspect for people to understand that recruiting has changed and the trends that are out there are not going away. Rick, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me, David.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and today our HR tip of the week will be provided by Rick Dacri. Rick?
Well, let's flip the coin here and let's look at it from a candidate standpoint who's looking for a job. And here's my eight things that they need to do. One, they need to position themselves as an expert, as someone who has performed well in their current organization. They need to develop their credentials. Make sure you get training. Make sure you get education. Don't depend on your employer to do it. Do it yourself. Produce results in your current job. Show that you have done things rather than you've just showed up. Command attention and create visibility. Selfless self-promotion is okay. Have a presence on Facebook, on LinkedIn, write articles, make presentations at your professional associations. Be responsive to people. Make sure that employers can find you. Make sure your phone number and your email is on your resume. Be passionate in an interview. Show some life. Don't be just a kind of someone who's there. Be enthusiastic. Build strong relationships with people so that people can find you and so that people can refer you to there. And lastly, become a mentor to other individuals. Show that you care about your profession, that you're willing to give back. You employ those eight pieces and you'll find a job.
That's your HR tip of the week. Thank you for listening and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.